Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Julian Whitaker as my special expert guest. Dr. Julian Whitaker is a pioneer in the fields of alternative and complementary medicine and is the founder and director of the Whitaker Wellness Institute in Newport Beach, California. Dr. Whitaker graduated from Dartmouth College in 1966 and received his MD degree in 1970 from Emory University Medical School. He completed his surgical internship at Grady Memorial Hospital in 1971 and continued in orthopedic surgery at the University of California in San Francisco. In 1974, Dr. Whitaker founded the California Orthomolecular Medical Society along with four other physicians and Nobel Prize-winning scientist Dr. Linus Pauling. Dr. Whitaker is the editor of Health and Healing Newsletter, routinely lectures on how to achieve optimal health, and has appeared on numerous national television programs and radio broadcasts. He is also the author of many books, including Shed 10 Years in 10 Weeks, Reversing Hypertension, Reversing Diabetes, A Guide to Natural Healing, Is Heart Surgery Necessary, The Pain Relief Breakthrough, The Memory Solution, and Reversing Heart Disease. Good morning, Dr. Whitaker. Welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Thank you very much, Corey. Glad to be here.
It's wonderful to have you on the show. I know all of our members and students are excited to hear what you have to say because many of them perhaps have been following your work for many years or read your books. Now, can you explain to our students that are listening right now what the difference is between conventional medicine and alternative medicine?
Well, alternative medicine is accurately described as medical therapies that are not taught in medical school or used in hospitals. However, everything that is in conventional medicine today was at one time an alternative medicine because that's the way medicine progresses. However, more to the point, the alternative medicine that I practice, and I don't really like the word alternative medicine, I think it's disparaging to many people, particularly to other doctors, is not so much alternative as it is orthomolecular or wellness medicine or preventive medicine. The difference between what I do and what conventional physicians do is that I am concentrating on non-pharmaceutical approaches, an orthomolecular approach, which is defined by Linus Pauling as the use of substances common into the body to engender health and treat disease. Conventional medicine has been co-opted and is virtually owned by pharmaceutical interest and also by the high-tech surgical interest, as we can see that most hospitals have 80% of their revenues coming from heart surgery, and that the pharmaceutical industry buys virtually all of the continuing medical education outreaches that physicians have to have for ongoing practice, and they have billions and billions of dollars to use for marketing. The pharmaceutical interest gets its money because of their ability to patent their pharmaceuticals, and that gives them the power to have a 5,000, 10,000, 100,000% markup on prescription drugs. In the medicine that I practice, where we're using vitamins and minerals, there's no possibility of garnering that amount of money because you can't patent vitamin C, you can't patent coenzyme Q10, and so consequently your markup is a mere fraction of the markup, and it is an unfair playing field. It's an unlevel playing field. So conventional docs, you know, use a great deal of power and money to sell their wares, whereas those physicians like myself, you know, are marching to a different drummer.
How many physicians would you estimate in the United States are like yourself that are practicing this wonderful brand of functional, integrative, complementary medicine?
Well, if you look at MDs or DOs, I would estimate probably maybe 2,000 at tops. If we look at people that are MDs and DOs that are doing it vigorously and are successful at it, maybe 1,400. Very, very small number. I belong to the American College for Advancement of Medicine, and this is made up of physicians that use chelation medicine, chelation therapy, and use a lot of vitamins and minerals and are very innovative in this area. And I know most of them. I've been on the board there. I've been an officer of that entity, and we only have about 1,200 members. So, and that's including Canada. So very few physicians do this, and I think the reason is it's very difficult to do it. It's very difficult to run a business this way. You have to be able to pay bills. You have to be able to pay yourself, and it's hard to do it practicing the kind of medicine that we practice.
Now, you're obviously in the minority, and it would be easy for you to practice conventional medicine.
No, it would not be easy for me to practice conventional medicine. If I were not doing this, I would not practice medicine at all.
Why is that?
Conventional medicine, I think, makes things worse. I just did an article this month in my newsletter, Health and Healing, where I'm looking at the effects of routinely prescribed pharmaceutical drugs. A prescription for pharmaceutical drugs are written 12.5 times per every man, woman, and child per year in this country. We've turned into a pharmaceutical nation. I talked to a lady this today that was taking 17 prescription drugs, all of which I would stop if she were my patient. All of them I would stop if she were my patient. I could not, would not, and I wouldn't even attempt to practice conventional medicine as it is practiced today. And I think it will be getting worse. You see, a lot of people like to think that, you know, the alternative docs, they are just, you know, hyper-independent or et cetera, and the conventional docs have the real science behind them, and whatever is doing in the alternative field will come over to the conventional field if it's really shown to be beneficial. And that is just not true. There's a substance called berberine, which we use in my clinic for type 2 diabetes. It has been compared to metformin and has been shown to be superior at lowering the A1C, lowering the fasting glucose levels that has been measured, lowering cholesterol, and helping in losing weight. It is superior to metformin. I will use it. Many of the physicians in the less conventional area will use it. Not one conventional diabetologist will even think about using it. Yet it is safer and more effective to metformin, which is the only oral drug I would even consider using. So there's a big difference. There's not this, you know, friendly little debate. There's a huge difference between physicians like myself and physicians in conventional medicine.
So for you, is it a matter of philosophy, ethics, and morality?
It's a matter of effectiveness. It's a matter of doing the most good and the least harm. I'll give you an example. For instance, the conventional physicians in their diabetic patients, all right? You follow me?
Yes.
Got all these, got 33 million diabetics treated by endocrinologists and internist. Diabetes means excessive urination. The word diabetes has nothing to do with sugar. Diabetes is excessive urination. There's several diabetic conditions, diabetes insipidus. There's several diabetic conditions that are cause excessive urination. Diabetes mellitus is the sugar diabetes. Now, the reason patients with diabetes mellitus have excessive urination is because when sugar gets above 200, 250, 300, it acts as an osmotic diuretic. It's just like mannitol. It's an osmotic diuretic. So you got these people with 350, 400 blood sugar levels. They are peeing all day long. Now, because this is an osmotic diuretic, it causes all water-soluble nutrients to be thrown out of the body because the kidney cannot reabsorb them under the pressure of such high levels of fluid and osmotic sugar carrying everything to the kidney. The kidney is just shut down because a tsunami is occurring. When you do the nutritional status of diabetics, they are always low in magnesium. The average level of magnesium in diabetic patients shown back in the 1970s didn't even, the high level of magnesium didn't even reach the average level in the non-diabetic population. So diabetes is a nutritional wasting condition. Yet in 30 years and 17,000 diabetic patients who come to go through Whitaker Wellness, not one was started on any kind of nutritional supplement regimen of water-soluble nutrients that the diabetes is losing every time it goes to the bathroom by a conventional or an endocrinologist. That's just incredible. that you have this nutritional wasting disease causing body parts to fall off, number one cause of blindness, number one cause of amputation, number one cause of kidney transplant, heart disease is through the roof, and they don't even try to replace the nutrients that are being washed out by the osmotic diuretic effect of the sugar. That's conventional medicine. Another thing, conventional medicine that we never do. When you have an obese type 2 diabetic, you should never give him insulin. What does insulin do? Insulin will cause that obese diabetic patient to gain more weight. When the diabetic patient gains more weight, what does the blood sugar do? It goes up. What does a doctor, a conventional doctor, do when the blood sugar goes up? Gives the patient more insulin. Insulin will cause weight gain in virtually every single obese diabetic that it is used in. So we stop insulin in all obese diabetics, and if need be, we will put them on a fasting regimen. And it is curative of the condition. Conventional docs give them insulin, fattening them up like cattle. And I would go back, I would leave the kind of practice I have now and go back and do that nonsense? No way.
So are you saying that the reason in part that diabetes or heart disease and all these degenerative conditions that have reached epidemic proportions are so high is partly to blame on the way that the medical profession is treating them or neglecting to recognize what they really are or what their causes are?
Yeah, it's partly that, but I think when we look at the obesity epidemic, I don't think doctors can be held responsible for the obesity epidemic. The obesity epidemic is, you know, from excessive calories, excessive fat, excessive simple carbohydrates. We've got this obesity epidemic going on for some time now because we're eating all these types of things. Doctors don't need to be involved for people to get obese. But the problem that we have is that doctors tend to make it worse when patients who are diabetic interact with them. There's no question that if a heavy diabetic interacts with a physician who is going to use insulin or the pills or something like that as his primary treatment of choice, and they always do, there's no question they make it worse. Because the weight goes up, the sugar goes up, the tissue begins to deteriorate. But no, I don't think they're the reason for the obesity.
Okay, that's great. But anyway, your insight is brilliant, and that helps people understand the differences. Now, you worked with Dr. Linus Pauling. What was that experience like?
Well, my association with Linus Pauling was out of a high degree of respect for Dr. Pauling, and also he did honor us with his presence when we formed the California Orthomolecular Medical Society. That was back in the 70s. We did this to lobby the then-Governor Jerry Brown for more leniency when it came to disciplining or looking at alternative physicians, because generally, you know, if you're different in medicine today, you can lose your license. It then became an educational society. He talked to our group every year that he could, and I brought him down to speak to other groups, and I visited him in his home just a few months before he died, and I did go to his funeral. But my relationship with him was primarily just out of respect. I never worked with him on anything, but I certainly followed his work, and he coined the term orthomolecular. See, the term orthomolecular is the use of substances common and essential to the body to engender health and treat disease. Very useful term. He wasn't just interested in vitamin C, though that was a key interest, but he was interested in all natural elements that are common to the body because, number one, they can be given with such safety, and number two, you can cure so many diseases with those substances. For instance, alcoholism. If AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, would just put a big bowl of multiple vitamins on their table instead of coffee, right now AA does not have good success with their people that come. Most of the people at AA don't pay any attention to anybody unless they've been there 2 years. It's a revolving door into AA. But I'm not criticizing AA for failing at handling alcoholics because nobody else can do it either. But it was shown back in the 1950s that by giving people who have cravings for alcohol large amounts of a whole variety of vitamins and minerals, the craving goes away. It's dramatic. And there's only one alcoholic treatment center in the United States that has patterned its work after that. This was Roger Williams' work, not the singer, but he was a PhD and he won a Nobel Prize for discovering pantothenic acid. But he discovered, both in rats and in humans, that if you give them large amounts of vitamins, their craving for alcohol goes away. And he coined the term of the defining to optimal intakes of nutrients, as opposed to simply, you know, the defending against deficiency diseases. These RDAs that the government comes out with are worthless. You know, it's stupid. But when you have optimal intake of nutrients, where you have large doses of nutrients to meet your optimal level, then diseases begin to go away.
Well, we know the food supply is reinforced with vitamins. We know that conventional doctors recommend iron based on blood tests, etc. But what is the problem with you recommending high doses? Why do they have a problem with that? What is it that they can't see or agree with?
I don't know. I don't know what it is they can't see or agree with.
They seem to have a problem, like with the appalling standard of vitamin C, or if you recommend 2,000 milligrams of vitamin E.
I don't know. I mean, why did they have a problem with Galileo? You know, I don't know. It's obvious. You see, Einstein said, if the solution to a problem is simple, it comes from God. But if the solution to the problem is complex and indecipherable, it comes from man. Man just screws things up. He is effective in moving society forward, but it is like very painful and destructive the way man does it. You know, we could do away with 90% of the pharmaceuticals that we now have. We are a pharmaceutical nation. Absolutely unbelievable. And pharmaceuticals, as prescribed, as I mentioned earlier, can be shown to be the number one killer in America. And it's getting worse. So why do the same doctors that put people on 15 drugs, you know, don't want to give more than 250 milligrams of vitamin C? I don't know. You ask them. Don't ask me.
Up here, they just, in Canada, they showed on CTV News a study out of Copenhagen showing that NSAIDs used by heart patients right after a heart attack to reduce the pain actually increases a second heart attack by 48%. What are your thoughts on that?
It's probably true. So you know what I would do? Don't do that. Don't use the NSAIDs. I don't prescribe those. They're also the number one cause of bleeding ulcers in this country. So, you know, NSAIDs are not this great drug. That's non-steroidal anti-inflammatory agents. That's ibuprofen and Motrin, Tylenol, these types of things. So everything that you would use an NSAID for, you could use aspirin, which is safer. And you could use other non-prescription elements. For instance, we use a lot in my practice of Mareva, which is a curcumin. It's a phytosome curcumin. It's excellent for pain relief. So there are a lot of things that you could use for not... I haven't had an NSAIDs in 15 years, and I'm just like everybody else. I have bumps, bruises, sores. I never take them. And I always have other things that I can take. Topical DMSO is excellent. So there's all kinds of things you can do. And then so it comes out to show that NSAIDs increases death by 48% in patients who've had a heart attack, right?
Yes.
Okay. What's that going to do? That's not even going to slow down the use of NSAIDs.
You're exactly right, because that's what the conventional physicians up here were defending the position and basically trying not to take any blame for what they're doing, in spite of the reality of the study. But, you know, on and on it goes, and you're absolutely right. Let them answer the question why. Now, what about the Human Genome Project, and now we can actually get our DNA sequenced and tested? Do you think there's value in that with the new future of integrative functional medicine?
I don't know. Do you? We've had the genome isolated for a decade, long time, what benefit has come from it? In other words, for whatever reason, no one can think of a single, or at least I can't, now I'm sure there might be, there's no obvious benefit that certain classes of people have acquired, have occurred, because of the Genome Project. And how long is it going to be before we quit talking about the potential benefits of the Genome Project and we actually see benefits of the Genome Project? I predict that we will never see substantial or measurable or significant benefits from the Genome Project. And right now, we haven't. And it's almost 20 years old. Now, what I think is that regardless of what your genetic makeup, you have a genetic makeup to have high cholesterol or whatever, you know, regardless of what your genetic makeup is, lifestyle changes or proactive pursuit of optimum health trumps genetics most of the time. Because even without genetic predisposition to obesity, diabetes, and all that kind of stuff, hundreds of millions of people fall into that trap. And they don't have the genome for that. So basically, the preventive medicine practices and the alternative and the orthomolecular practices that I use at Whitaker Wellness and that other colleagues of mine use are far more likely to have benefit in large numbers of people than the Genome Project ever will. But we keep throwing money at the Genome Project, we keep talking about it, and we keep waiting for something really significant to happen with the Genome Project. Look, there's certain diseases, muscular dystrophy, there's certain diseases that have a big genetic component. I know that, everybody knows that. But we've known that for 40 years. Sequencing your genes as if this is going to be the ultimate preventive medicine tool, in my opinion, is stupid. But it will remain stupid until we have some kind of evidence that the Genome Project actually has helped a significant number of people. Now, if you want to help millions of people, have them do the things that I and my colleagues have been talking about in terms of diet, nutritional supplements, exercise, periodic fasting, weight control, these types of things, and you'll help millions of people right out of the chute. I've had over 50,000 patients go through Whitaker Wellness. The overwhelming majority get instant benefit over 2 to 3 weeks, which just continues on as they continue to do the things that we've told them how to do. I personally have already benefited more people, I predict, than the Genome Project ever will. And I'm just pushing health. So you find, the minute you find a group of people that has actually had substantial benefit, the way I can hand you thousands that have actually had substantial benefit, and that your group has come in because of the Genome Project, call me up.
Okay, well, that's fantastic. You know, that's bold, and it's right on, and I'm right on the same page. Now, what are your thoughts about our universal health care, our so-called socialized medical system up here in Canada versus what's going down on in the States? How do you compare them? Is one better than the other?
Well, I think when every despotic, I believe this is accurate, but every despotic country began by socializing medicine. You know, I think it was done in Germany and Italy, I think. I'm not real sure. It's the easiest one to grab power from people because it is easy sell. Whenever you have government-run medical services, what you have is government-run decision-making in the doctor-patient relationship. If the doctor might want to do this, he can't do this because the government says no. You have this third-party interface between the doctor and the patient. It causes runaway inflation. My father was a surgeon, and he was in his peak in the 60s and 70s. Medicare came and was a volunteer program signed by Lyndon Johnson in 1965. My father was a very active general surgeon at the time, and he was upper income, worked very hard, patients loved him, and there was no third party payers for his service. And he would do a gallbladder operation and the total bill for the patient would be $700. All right, the patient would pay $300 or $400, maybe get a church or something, and his patients would send him Christmas cards the rest of their lives. Now, that same operation is going to cost $250,000 because you got a third-party payer. Now, when my dad was practicing and in his prime in the 60s, the American medicine was the crown jewel of civilized accomplishment in the world. No one had the progression, the improvements, and the activity and the enthusiasm for medicine as did the United States of America. And it was the magnet from people all over the world to come to America to get their services, you know, particularly if it was sophisticated. During that time, the medical expenditures were, or the medical cost, were about 4% of the gross national product, GDP. 4%. Medicare was signed in 1965. It was voluntary. Then they predicted that Medicare expenditures in 1965 in payment for hospital services only was about $760 million. And they predicted that by 1990, taking into account inflation and additional usage, that it would be about $2 billion in the next 25 years. And 1990 comes around, it was $90 billion. They missed it virtually by 70 times. Now, Medicare is out of sight. We have an unfunded liability for Medicare. We have $34 trillion in hospital, $32 trillion Medicare Type B, and $17 trillion Medicare Type D. We have over $80 trillion of unfunded medical expenses. Yet, the medical care in this country is getting worse. We have insurance companies that are now shipping people for knee replacement to Thailand, getting faster service, better service, at a fraction of the cost. So this is a wonderful thing for people to get all riled up about, because all these greedy doctors, all they want is money, when the government gets in and makes it virtually impossible for there to be any cost controls. Because the cost control prior to government coming in was between the doctor and the patient. Most patients back when my father was doing appendicitis couldn't pay $40,000 for an appendicitis. So no doctor ever charged him that. But what they charged him was good for the doctor, good for the patient, and that was what they could pay. So when you put the government in between the doctor and the patient, now they are the ones that make all the decisions. They decide what the patient can have. They decide what it's going to cost. They decide what they pay the doctor. We've had some people go to doctors and they're going to be for a knee operation, and they say, well, how much is this going to cost? And the doctor says, oh, my gosh, no one's ever asked me that. So whenever you get the government involved in any medical service, it will ultimately implode to the point where it is highly expensive, very regulated, no movement, no scientific advancement, and it's stifled, and then medical care just deteriorates.
Dr. Whitaker, can you tell us about your website, maybe something about your product line, and also your newsletter?
Yeah, website, there's two of them. There's Whitaker Wellness Institute, that's my medical practice in California, and then there's drwhitaker.com, which is the outreach I have with the newsletter and the vitamins and mineral supplement regimens. WhitakerWellness.com is more about what we do here at Whitaker Wellness. It talks about the hyperbaric oxygen treatment we have, the ECP, laser treatment for back pain and shoulder pain, anodyne treatments. We have a lot with our diet treatment, fasting regimens. So that's our medical treatment. And the other one is talks a lot about our nutritional supplement regimens.
Great. Thank you very much. Well, our time is gone. My goodness, I could speak with you so much more. We'd love to have you back on. But thanks very much for being my guest today.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And I'm wondering if you can leave us with a final comment, maybe directed towards the young people today that are coming up in these days of uncertainty. They don't know what's going on or who's doing what. They don't have a lot of faith in man or God. So how do these people stay well? What can they look forward to in these days?
Well, I think they just have to educate themselves, and they have to be very proactive in figuring out what it is they want to do. One of the problems that you have in medicine is that everybody seems, the doctor gives orders, okay? The interesting thing about medicine is that the two areas where I think medicine is most off the rails and most damaging are in those areas where patients are frightened. People in plastic surgery, people in orthopedic surgery, the patients aren't frightened, and they get a high level of benefit. But in heart disease and cancer, people are frightened, and that's where I think huge areas of problem are occurring. Whenever you make a decision with a doctor who has frightened you, then he has the advantage, and he has eliminated your capacity for reasonable decision making when it comes to your health. So be careful of doctors who use fear tactics.
Dr. Julian Whitaker is a pioneer in the fields of complementary and alternative medicine. He is a mover and a shaker, and we want you to know that we're behind you 100%, and thanks very much for the boldness and for the work that you're doing and that you have done in all your books, etc. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Enjoy being with you, Corey.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see ya changing heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.